All right, we're back on the Young Turks, John and Cenk with you. I forgot my name for a second. International Day Without a Name. JR is also here. We're going to need him for this next story. Hold. First, let me read you a couple of tweets. Kayleen Babcock says, my morning news in Japan, hashtag TYT Live, hashtag big in Japan, hashtag too strong.
I'm hoping to visit Japan this year, actually.
Oh, you are? I didn't know that. Okay. I was going to say hi in Japan in Japanese, but I forgot it. So I was about to say arigato, Mr. Ramato.
Isn't it konnichiwa?
Konnichiwa, yes. There you go. I don't speak
Japanese, but I think.
John heard all those stories we did about how Japan is sexless. And all of a sudden, there's a vacation in Japan. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying.
I'm trying to help. Okay.
That's the kind of sweet guy you are. Okay. Aaron in Reno writes in, when is Jason up for election, referring to Chaffetz? He's motivated me to make sure he gets to make those same choices after becoming unemployed.
Every 2 years.
Luckily, he's in the House of Representatives, which means he's up for election every 2 years.
Yeah.
And I want to give you two donors for the tytnetwork.com/go journalism drive. And if you get a chance, Jesus, let's see where we are on that. $127 from Sarah. And $300 from Matthew. Thank you, guys. Super appreciate it.
I also saw a lot of tweets of people after watching the video saying that they had donated to Lala.org. There's a different donation, obviously.
But that's fantastic.
That's awesome to hear.
Yeah. And guys, so we're at 1.37 there, almost at 1.5. Dramatic, dramatic announcements. More journalists, more ass kicking when we get to 1.5. But I wanted to note there. Here, bring that up one more time, real quick. 40,000 donations. 40,000 different donations to the journalism drive. I love you guys. This is how we do it together. Thank you.
I'm just glad that people chose not to buy the iPhone, to give instead. Thank you.
Unlike your current representatives, we actually try to stick up for you. Okay. Now, let's do the first story. No, it goes to me. So Ben Carson yesterday made outrageous comments about slaves, as usual. So let's share that with you. And then I'm going to give you Samuel L. Jackson's reaction, and you're going to love it.
Were other immigrants who came here in the bottom of slave ships worked even longer, even harder for less. But they too had a dream.
No, they didn't. They had a nightmare. They didn't come here looking for a dream. It was involuntary. They came in chains. And I don't want to go through all the things that happened in slavery again, but apparently Ben Carson's thick head doesn't get it. So let me kick it over to Samuel Jackson. He tweets, okay, Ben Carson.
I can't.
Immigrants in the bottom of a slave ship? Motherfucker, please. And now the one we're really going to discuss there is hashtag Dickheaded Tom.
I've never seen that hashtag before.
Neither have I, but apparently the American people liked it because there was 252,000 likes.
God.
So now, to be fair, Ben Carson tried to walk that comment back. He went on Armstrong Williams' show. Let's show you that.
Whether you're voluntary or involuntary, if you come from outside to the inside, you're an immigrant. Slaves came here as involuntary immigrants, but they still had the strength to hold on.
That's not really how it worked. They actually held on for generations and generations, and a lot of them didn't hang on. They were worked to death. And again, for them, America didn't represent freedom. It represented the exact opposite. Okay.
It's like saying, like, if somebody runs up on you in the street and starts wailing on you, you are an involuntary boxer. Still a boxer.
Yeah, and Republicans love to change words. Estate tax becomes death tax. Torture becomes enhanced interrogation. And now slavery has become involuntary immigration.
Yeah.
Okay, that's all.
It's so easy. Just say, you know, I am extremely sorry for my choice of words. It implied that I don't know about the horrors of slavery. I should have put it a different way. Obviously, slavery is one of the worst tragedies in the history of the world.
So
that's all you have to say. You don't have to say, no, I'm actually right.
Yeah. Well, would Samuel Jackson have accepted that apology? Well, we go to his next quote. He told TMZ, an apology is not going to help.
Oh, okay.
He could quit his job and stop talking, period. How about that?
He has to take a vow of silence.
When asked if he thinks the administration should address it, Jackson added, they probably think the same thing he thinks, which is why they put him in office in the first place. Of course, they think the same thing he thinks.
Well, they say that they have this idea of the idyllic slavery period, where it's like, yeah, the white slave masters are looking after them. They got them housing, they got them health care. You know, occasionally they let them learn to read, maybe. It was nice, and it was a relaxing time with family and song. They literally say this.
Bill O'Reilly said it.
They say, yes, and just Ben Carson is just kind of a stupider version of that, basically.
No, that's
the same fiction.
What Samuel Jackson's trying to point out is that's the whole point of Ben Carson, right? Is so that they could put him forward and say, I didn't say it. I mean, Bill O'Reilly screwed up and said it last year. I mean, it was a youthful indiscretion and 70 some odd years old. But, but no, the black guy said it. You see, our one black friend, we got him to say it. Slavery, just involuntary immigration, okay?
See, that's what brings about the dictated time, am I right?
Exactly.
The hashtag that's heard around the world. around the Twitterverse. So this is the thing. I always remember there's been a bit of a, obviously it's a reference off of Uncle Tom. Mm-hmm. So that's the disparaging term you want to use for a black person who's selling out, who's being the voice that racist white folks want but can't say because it gives them cover. It's easy, it makes it really easy for you. You pick a gay person to talk about how nasty gay people are, and you pick a black person to talk about how disgusting black folks are, and on, we know that. But you know, I remember looking up and talking about how you can use that term and whether or not it's acceptable, but people hate to be called that. It comes from the book Uncle Tom's Cabin, which I remember there was something about it. At first, it was the Uncle Tom character was seen as a martyr in the book because he stood up, he was protecting slaves that had escaped or something. I haven't read it. And then he was killed for it. So he was seen as a martyr, as a character, as like, this is a really strong, keeps to his will black slave. But around 1919, there was a shift. And when black Americans, we're getting more of this pride going. They're like, we're not going to be any more of these Uncle Toms. So it suddenly became a negative thing to be an Uncle Tom because like you need to be a stronger black person in this. So some people still think it could be a positive term because that was the original thought when the book was written, but it's also taken as a bad thing. So
which do you think that Samuel Jackson meant?
I'm pretty sure he didn't mean it as a compliment. So no, you're right. And there is confusion around that phrase. And it's unfortunate because it got twisted. But now, colloquially, everybody means it as someone who's a sellout, right? Now, interesting conversation is how does it affect different races? Who can say it? Who can't say it? Is it a big deal in the black community to call someone Uncle Tom? Like, is that like almost calling them a word where, like the N word, where you go, hey, be cool, be cool? And is a white person allowed to call a black person Uncle Tom?
It's a stronger version of sellout. You know, sellout gets tossed around, it's easy. And no, if a white person, it's one of those things, even there's scenarios when white folks would be like, oh, you know, I'm standing up in support of black folks and not selling out. And you start calling black folks Uncle Tom, so you're like, okay, well, hold on. Mm-hmm. You just observe, stop talking. Mm-hmm. There's still a line.
Yeah,
you don't jump in as if you know enough of the background or have experienced enough of the background of being a black person in America to want to say, hey, yeah, that's right. Me and my black friends can call you sellout black person Uncle Tom. You're like, whoa, okay, cool. I like your supporting, but calm down with the terms.
Yeah, and having done the show now for 15 straight years, I'd be surprised if I didn't say it at some point, right? Mm-hmm. When I got all worked up, right? I don't know what I am anyway, right? So but I'm not black, okay? I'm raceless, as we were talking about earlier in the show, right? Yeah. Apparently, but it's not about thought police, guys. And it's not about politically correct. It's about being thoughtful about other people's feelings. And so knowing that, I think that it makes sense that, hey, maybe it's not my role to say that, even if I've said it in the past.
We have a society.
Yeah. But even so, part of the reason we're having this conversation is that is not a thing that is said lightly, right? Because now, look, I was in a tour in Charleston, South Carolina just earlier this year, and they explained that the number one thing that the slave revolters, there were several slave revolts. The biggest one involved like 8,000 slaves in South Carolina. And number one thing they had to make sure is that the in the words of my African American tour guide, the House Negroes didn't find out, okay? Because they would be the first to sell you out. And in fact, that particular one, the largest one, one of the House Negroes did find out. They told the masters, and everybody was arrested, and many of the people planning the revolt were killed.
Yeah.
Okay, and so you know, to your point about the right wing says they provided them health care. Was the whipping part of the health care? Were the executions part of the health care? Not quite sure about that.
Separating families, and rape.
Right. So now, obviously, Samuel Jackson thinks that Ben Carson deserves it, and Samuel Jackson is not a guy who usually tiptoes around the line. If he thinks he's got it, he'll say it. So what's your take? Does Ben Carson cross the line, JR, into a dick-headed Tom?
The dick-headed Tom, I guess that's a, I'm still trying to picture exactly.
Don't try to picture too hard. Yeah.
It's a fun twist on the term. When you have this consistency, and it's almost like when we saw it, no one went, oh my God, I can't believe Ben Carson said such a thing. It was like, oh, here goes Ben Carson again.
Yeah.
So he has a track record. You can expound on the word all you want, the way that Samuel Jackson did. I'm okay with that. But it's not going to change who he is. So it's kind of falling on deaf ears as far as the target of it. It's not like Ben Carson's going to go, man, Samuel Jackson really knows how much of a sellout I am and how I'm a cover. I think I'll stop doing this. No, not going to happen. He's making his money. He's getting his prestige and fulfilling his ego based off of being subordinate to someone who actually hates who he is. So it's okay.
Yeah.
To him.
I was looking up based on this, his Twitter activity. I might have another Samuel Jackson story for tomorrow. He's on the warpath. He's starting up all sorts of issues.
So look, a lot of his characters are on the warpath, and it turns out there's a good reason for that, because that's the kind of guy he is.
He played one of those characters, one of the reverse.
Yeah, that's right. He played
Django.
A Django Unchained. He played what is the quote unquote House Negro. And so finally, I just quick defense of Ben Carson. That same speech, he did point out what sometimes can happen to a brain to make it say things it shouldn't say. This is a literal quote from that same speech. Every human being, regardless of their ethnicities or their background, they have a brain, the human brain. You can't overload the brain. Have you ever heard people say, don't do that or you'll overload your brain? You can't overload the human brain. And maybe that's what happened, right? And he just got all
no,
that
you
brain
can't.
Surgery.
You can't.
He just overloaded it. And remember, guys, not the elephant brain, not a mice brain, the human brain.
He's an expert on the brain. That's his thing. Like, we criticize him for doing other stuff, but that's his thing.
Can you be
he can't talk about that.
Can you be an expert on the brain without having one?
I have to look. I don't know.
Okay. All right.
Jeez. Okay. Let's mix it up a little bit. More and more Americans across the country are getting politically active. And in particular, they're getting involved, showing up, town halls, town council meetings, and things like that. They're starting to show up where their representatives are. But not just regular Americans like you and me. Dave Chappelle recently showed up unannounced at a city council meeting in Ohio, where he of course lives. And he began to speak about the relationship often strained between police and the residents of that area. And so we want to roll a small section of his comments.
We all knew Officer Brody because his sister was my music teacher. We all knew Officer Banner's children. We all knew Officer Nipper's children. And now we are being policed by what feels like an alien force. Huge gaffe on New Year's Eve. I saw it all go down. I was there with my children, and I was there with my friends and neighbors. In all fairness, the crowd was drunk because it was New Year's Eve. And I left early because nobody felt completely right. So I am trying to be balanced and fair. But what I did want to know is, what is this pool of law enforcement that you can pull a chief out of that is special enough to police this town, which is wildly weak? So I would beseech the council to look deeply and to look hard, because this is a golden opportunity. Literally, you could kill the game. In this Trump era, this is an opportunity to show everybody that local politics reigns supreme.
So there, the incident he referred to is on New Year's Eve, there was a taser use by a police officer, which caused a lot of protest in that area. And that's not his whole comments. You can watch the whole comments online. But he did talk about in his own past, he's had his personal safety protected by police officers. He's not anti-police. He likes the way it used to be when it felt like it was a little bit closer to the community. And certainly for that town, but we know that it's across the country, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah, so I love a couple of things he's doing here. Number one, he's doing activism. This is getting involved. And look, I love protests, and there's a lot of different ways that you can get involved. I think voting makes a huge difference. Encouraging other people to vote makes a huge difference. But also showing up and having your voice heard by your local city council.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. And I, you know, the right wing hates it when left wing celebrities use their power to try to get positive change in the world. They're like, ugh, positive change, right? Now they love right wing celebrities who are like, I want lower taxes and I believe in guns, blah 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 blah, right? They're like, oh yes, Ted Nugent, Ronald Reagan, oh I love you, Scott Baio, whoever the hell you are, Chachi, right? So. Now, I like it when celebrities use their considerable power, because when Dave Chappelle shows up, people pay attention, right?
Yeah.
Even the folks there, they're like, one of the guys in the back room like, is that Dave Chappelle? Anyway, and so he says, all right, let's do something about policing in this community, let's fix it together. We got a unique opportunity. And the second reason I liked it is the contrast that he drew up there about the old times and the new times. And we talk about this a lot in regards to policing. And it's not, funny enough, it's not a black and white issue. So in the old times, there were no video cameras and there was a lot of beatings. So I'm not romanticizing the past.
As well as killings, yeah.
Yes. And you could argue that racism was worse in the old times, right? But there were some things that were better in the old times. So as Chappelle points out, you used to know your local cops. They were from your neighborhood. Now they sometimes bring in cops not from your neighborhood. And it's like an occupying army. The guys who did this originally were the LA cops. I mean, look, there's a lot of different communities that did it, but LA was early on. They brought in cops from the South, a lot of them from Alabama and other places, and they didn't live in LA, they didn't live in the communities, they lived in Orange County. And they drive in, and then that's why, among the reasons why LA cops had a brutal reputation. Right? For decades and decades and decades.
We also know in some parts of the South, of course, we've tracked police officers who get involved in the shooting, generally of someone who's unarmed. And then we find out what was their recent past. Oh, they've been shuttled from department to department because they keep having incidents.
Yeah, and so when your music teacher's brother is the cop, you could talk it through. Hey, if there's an issue, you talk to your music teacher. She talks to her brother, and he knows you, and he's less likely to beat you up because he doesn't view you as somebody he's occupying. He views you as, you know, if you're one of the students there, the kid he's got to protect, right? So it just makes a giant difference. I also think that in the old days, they actually used to say, freeze, you're under arrest. This is taking a couple of seconds here before they shot someone. Shooting someone back in the day was a big deal, right? Now it's like, they're taught like, oh, everything's panic time, and if anybody looks at you wrong, and it's a slight 1% or 1% chance that it could cause you harm, just shoot him, kill him, and shoot to kill. So we're much more flippant. So some things are better and some things are much worse these days in policing.
And one of the things that I'm most worried about is fear. Not the fear that people have of the cops, and in a lot of areas they should fear the cops because the cops have these series of excess and brutality and all that. But the fear that's really deadly is the fear that the cops feel, because they think that they are going into a war zone every day. And that makes them twitchy. That makes them see weapons that turn out not to be weapons on people. That makes them fire at people before it's necessary. And of course, you're going to be more scared of an area where you don't know the area, you don't know any of the people, than you would if it was your own hometown. And so should we be surprised that it turns out that cops now are constantly fearing for their lives when they're being shipped around the country to deal with people that they don't understand?
And finally, again, to be fair to the cops, they're not that wrong, because there's so many guns in the country. There's about 250 million guns in the country. So when you teach them, hey, anybody can have a gun, in America it's quite literal. That's one of the downsides of having everybody have a gun, is that the cops think, it could be a gun, it could be a gun, I gotta shoot, I gotta save myself first. So we need better training, we need to readjust how people are thinking. I think we need gun control. I mean, look, again, to be fair to cops, people argue against doing gun control on cop killing bullets, the ones that could pierce armor. They're like, no, I mean, I need the armor piercing bullets. What do you need it for? The main thing you need it for is to kill cops.
Yeah.
So things have changed. It's not a black and white issue, but if people like Dave Chappelle show up in their local community, even if you're not Chappelle and you're not a celebrity, it could make a difference. Make sure your voice is heard.
Yeah.
And the entire video of Chappelle we'll put in the description box below. You can watch it through that link.
Do you want to do one more story before the break?
No. Let's take a quick break here. And we've got more important stories, and including great news about crime. You don't often hear that, do you? Okay. And we also have some lighter stories where we make fun of Rudy Giuliani in a very unique way. We'll show you. All right, back on the Young Turks. Stephen Flitton writes in, I live in Ireland, great show. I won't be going to the US for brain surgery anytime soon.
I like Samuel that. Jackson was also asked, would you let him do brain surgery on you? He's like, not on me, not on anyone I'm related to.
And then Bob FLV writes in, am I the only one that has noticed the sound quality on hashtag TYT Live is so much better? Thanks. No, Bob, you're not the only one who noticed. Greg Beery, Mike Shekels, and everybody else here, Bart, Jesus, etc., that worked on it. Great job in making the audio far, far better than it was.
I don't know what they did.
Well, look, Greg's a sound engineer, and he recently came back to the program. And that's the thing, like if you have resources, then your sound gets better, your video gets better, etc. Like people look back at some of our old clips, they're like, why is the video quality horrific?
Well, the internet also sucked back then.
It did, but we also had no money. Yeah. We had nothing.
No cameras that could do it better. Right. Like,
yeah.
It's complicated.
So tytnetwork.com/join.
Yeah. It was a big revelation when we figured out that there are people trained in these things.
Yeah. Speaking of the members that power our show, Adam Fernie and Lucy Pedrana are our members of the day. And in the postgame today, I will talk about an inappropriate topic that I thought about doing a segment on today. John almost tackled me and forbid me from doing the story because it's International Women's Day and I'm apparently grossly inappropriate.
I got really uncomfortable, like, I gotta talk to Cenk. We can't do this, but he's gonna be really mad. So he wasn't, thankfully, but I was really worried.
Okay, we'll tell you what that was for the members. Again, tytnetwork.com/join to become a member and power the show and get the post games. Okay, real quick, Emma Kitchens, $3. Oh, I'm not supposed to read the last names. And Greg, $27. Thank you so much, guys, for the funding journalism campaign. And that is tytnetwork.com/go. Thank you. All right, let's go on to the next story. That's me again. Okay.
He just likes to check in on me from time to time. I appreciate it.
Yes. So, interesting set of folks that TMZ caught up with here. Now, this is going to be a wild contrast. And I'm the only one who made this connection, but you'll enjoy it. So, first is political. It's Rudy Giuliani. They caught up with him at an airport in Washington, D.C. Now, they're going to ask him about, hey, isn't the Trump administration a little cray-cray? And he's going to say, no, I like that they're chaotic and a mess. You'll see that in a second. But what I want you to notice while you're watching is this guy thought he was going to be Secretary of State. He was deeply loyal to the Trump campaign, and he thought he was going to get a great position in the cabinet. And turns out, no, he didn't get anything. Because being loyal to Trump and supporting him doesn't mean much if he didn't put down cold hard cash. So look at Rudy Giuliani schlepping around the airport all by himself. Oh yeah, watch.
Sometimes things seem a little scattered in the White House. Like, what advice would you get to just calm things down?
Well, I don't know that I want to calm things down. I want to see change.
Right.
And whenever you have change, you have disruption. So, in a way, I expected this kind of sort of discussion to go on, because he's trying to change things and trying to get America moving in a different direction.
The local time.
So far, you look at the market, you look at the jobs growth,
yeah.
He's doing great.
So it's good that they'll make something keep things going that way.
I think he's got people thinking. He's got people thinking about the right things, lowering taxes, straightening out health care, making our military much, much stronger. These are the things I believe in.
Okay, so he's got no posse, he's got no crew, and he's like, oh, yeah, okay, make the military stronger. I like Cray Cray. Okay, so now, meanwhile, TMZ also caught up with Darius McCrary. Now, he's the guy who played Eddie Winslow on Family Matters. He's apparently still relevant in the world.
He's still acting.
Okay, all right, bless his heart. And he came out with what vaping or something of some sort.
It was a vape shop.
Yeah. It was a vape shop. And unlike Rudy Giuliani, he actually has a crew with him, okay? He's got more of an entourage than the guy who thought he was going to be Secretary of State. So, and they are hilarious. I want you to check out his posse. Here's Darius McCrary.
So what's her motivation?
I'm going to tell you, the motivation is TMZ has created a disease called I want to be famous so bad I say I'd do anything for it. And that's what the motivation is, because see, if I can be famous, then I can fool all of you into believing a whole bunch of things that aren't true.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you that the only time that my baby has seen boiling water is when I was in the kitchen cooking dinner.
Woo!
Because you're too good to cook dinner.
So, I need to do that more often on the show. Just say something and walk off.
Okay, woo!
No, Edwin's got a woo, and I got to walk off.
Yeah. So now, look, he's talking about his ex-wife, and they have a lot of drama, and with it, and was he holding a baby over a boiling water? Whatever. I don't care about that at all. Okay.
Well, I care a little bit.
Okay. Well, he says he wasn't. Woo! Okay. What I care about is his posse. Rudy couldn't even get two guys to hang out with him going,
mm-hmm. Rudy should vape.
And whenever he says like mediocre lines, they get all excited, and then they walk with him. Darius McCrary ain't carrying his own bags. Here, I got one more clip for you.
It don't matter who moved out of the house first. It don't matter. Right. You know what? Go ahead and stay where you at, because please, I'm moving on. I like it better in Orange County anyway. Oh, she's much flyer.
So,
see, when you are a parent, you understand that the decisions you make are life-changing and long-lasting. So I'm not going to do anything or put any stories out there that would bring shame or embarrassment to my children over their lifetime.
Right. That's a man.
In a long-lasting situation that would be irreversible. The best parts of my children, their mothers gave me. Because I still got mine.
Yeah. Wait, is he saying that he didn't give anything good to his kids?
I don't,
is that what he said there?
You're paying too much attention to what he's saying. Okay. And then I realized as I was watching this for the second time now, oh, Rudy not only doesn't have a crew, he was that crew for Trump.
Yeah.
He was the guy in the back going,
well, technically, Christie was the guy in the back.
No, they were both a silk and diamond, like, woo, yeah, go Donald. And they got nothing for it.
I think it's a little bit worse for Rudy, because not only did he not have the posse, and like he's a former governor, and he thought he was going to be president multiple times.
Former mayor, yes.
Former mayor, sorry. He also thought he was going to be president, and then tried to get into Trump's administration, and he's by himself. But not only is he by himself, like, yes, the TMZ guy recognized him. Nobody else is like, hey, Rudy, give me your autograph, Rudy. Nobody cares. Any Minecraft YouTuber in the country would have been recognized more than that in that airport.
So, look, I know I'm the only guy in the country who made that connection, but I enjoyed the contrast there. And I enjoy seeing the guys who groveled to Donald Trump get nothing. Okay, and finally, it's a day without women. We're missing all of our producers here at the Young Turks, hence the wrong share.
That's not the right share. I was trying to figure out what it was, and JR identified it. It is share, technically. That's a bad picture.
Can I explain it? Because I feel like you say no.
Sure.
I get it.
Well, I mean, for everyone who may not know it, it's obviously clueless. But Cher was Alicia Silverstone's character in Clueless.
Yeah.
So when it was put through to make Rudy Giuliani look like Cher from Clueless, it turned into Cher the singer.
Yeah, people always like if there's something that they don't that they think is wrong or don't like about that graphic or like a title or a thumbnail, they'll like tweet us. There's no communication. I'm not involved in any of that. Jake's not involved in any of that. We try, but we can't. Also, one other question on the TMZ thing. So they caught this guy outside of a vape shop. Do they just have hundreds of people stationed randomly around the city looking around at all times for any celebrity?
Yes.
That's really what they do?
I don't know if this is one of them, but aren't there celebrity hotbeds where they kind of hang?
So apparently that vape shop in Orange County is a celebrity hotbed. They're like, oh, look, that's Darius McCrary's homeboy. And like they will spot the white guy and they're like, Darius McCrary, like a C-list, D-list, H-list guy.
He was funny on Family Matters. I don't have a problem with him, but he was also wearing glasses. How did they even know? Maybe the vape shop is calling TMZ.
Hey guys, I hate to jump in. That vape shop, that's in Tarzana. It's not in Orange County.
Oh,
I know where that vape shop's at.
Bart's been there.
He works for TMZ on the weekends.
Okay.
Where's Natalie Dormer?
Okay. To give you a sense of how much TMZ's around town, I've been stopped twice by TMZ.
Yeah?
So, which makes it one more time than Rudy Giuliani.
Twice more than me. Oh, that'd be weird.
All right, let's keep going.
Okay. I don't know what pop star is going to end up on this master graphic. I guess we'll just have to see. Anyway, good news for once, and it has to do with crime. Now, if you've been paying attention to politics over the past year or two, Trump has been telling you, as Republicans often do, that this country is an H-hole in terms of crime. It is just on fire, murders and all that. And you know if you watch a show that that's not true. But look at the numbers specifically for teenagers. Here's the arrest rate for teenagers. That's going back to 1980. But you see there that max back in 1994, 95. The blue is gonna be for the overall crimes. The red is for the violent crimes. And like you may not realize how much of a drop that is. But between the mid-90s to 20 years later, it's a third, less than a third of what it was, the arrest rate for juveniles. How is this not a massive story that something we've done as a society in terms of government or technology, or maybe we'll get into a few theories in a little bit. The arrest rate for teenagers is just a tiny fraction of what it once was. We should be celebrating as a nation this amazing development.
So that's part of the problem with news. If it bleeds, it leads. So if there's something disastrous, you cover it. If there's good news, it doesn't get as much coverage. We're trying to change that here, obviously, give you the good news, bad news, and give you all of it. And so this is wonderful news. Wow. I mean, the violent crime dropping by, what, 200% basically? If you're down to a third of what it is over two decades. Nice job, America. It turns out we were winning all along.
Yeah.
And that we, and at least in this case, we didn't make him have to make America great again. It was already becoming great as we go. And I also want to give you guys this context because you see a lot of things like, crime, oh my God, danger, danger, oh my God, what the hell's going on? No, it turns out it's actually much better than it was 20 years ago. And as to why, well, that's a really interesting question. It's a mixed bag. And so, for example, the right wing can say, hey, you know what? They started locking people up at much greater rates, and then there's less crime. And Bill Clinton did, and he got a lot of grief for that from the left, right? So now there was a great article written by Kevin Drum and Mother Jones, I believe, that explained that the biggest factor might be lead. That there was tremendous lead in the air because it used to come out of the car exhausts. And that lead is known to affect your brain's development, lower IQ, and make human beings more violent. So we took the lead out, and this is why the EPA is so important. This is why environmental protection is massively important. And they have study after study showing the effects of lead and what happens. And they go, okay, here's where there's a high concentration of lead and there's a big drop and you see crime dropping this much. Here's a high area of lead and it stays a high area of lead and crime doesn't drop. I mean, you should read the whole thing. And it's fascinating.
Right? Yeah, I remember when we initially covered it. It's amazing.
Yeah. And so there's a great number of factors. I only just mentioned two there, but great news either way.
Well, but the reason why we don't want to talk about it is because, as you said, there's a great number of factors and that's boring. I'm just saying, the way Americans consume things.
Yeah.
It's like, things, things should be simple, like why the election went the way it was. It was only one reason. One reason. The one I like.
We can't compile more than one reason why something's happening. So it's too much work to listen. If you talk about this extensively on Sunday shows or on random local news, like, oh, guess what crime is going on? Even if it's locally, it's like, oh, where's the fire down on the 405? I'm waiting for that news story. So we don't care. And we're not going to listen any further. And number two, politicians don't want to point out, because if you either have to give credit to someone who was in office when stuff started going down or went up, you can only say, oh, they're the bad guy. You have to take all the credit. Mm-hmm. And if it hasn't happened, if it happens over multiple presidents, which how does one president change an entire thing like this? It's other factors. And yeah. You have to go further than that. You just want to say, I'm your savior. Yeah. I did it on me. So what Giuliani did with crime, it was me. Yeah. I walked in, they saw my face, and they stopped doing crime.
So that's such a great point by JR, because so much of the news is driven by the people that are in power. So if someone raises their hand and says, it was me, it was me, it was me, I get credit, then the news will cover it because someone's trying to take credit for it. But if nobody steps up to do that, they don't bother even reporting on it, obviously. Oh, look, by the way.
In that case, it was me.
Honestly, I hadn't even noticed this story also from Kevin Drum. At Mother Jones.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah. Great job, Kevin Drum. Thank you for covering the things that matter. And obviously, we thought it was important. No matter who gets the credit, right wing, left wing, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And look, we don't know for sure to what extent lead affected this specifically. We do see the evidence that it had effects on a lot of things, including violent crime and that sort of thing. But like, imagine if that is actually the case. And I'm going to go a little bit crazy here, but. So this is like a proxy for a lot of stuff that can be going on in your life. Do you get arrested for a crime? That's a very specific, traceable, measurable thing. But if there's a pollutant in the environment that's affecting us, our brain development, our aggressive nature, how violent we are, the way we think about the world, how deeply we can think about the world, then you might find that kids becoming 10 or 11 these days are not going to get arrested. But there's a lot of people that weren't affected so much that they kill someone and get arrested. But that doesn't mean that they weren't affected. This could be so much bigger than just a little bit of violent crime. Our politicians grew up in an environment where there was lead all up in the air affecting them. We're a very war-prone country. We like to use force. I mean, could that not be affected by this too? It doesn't have to simply be, do I steal something from a corner store? It can be the way I approach the world has been affected by growing up in a world filled with lead. In which case, these teenagers could be better, not just smarter than us, but perhaps more moral, less prone to violence. We could have a very positive future ahead of us.
I never thought about it that way.
This think tank here, right?
That's okay. Right. No, I never thought about it that way. That's actually a really interesting point. Maybe millennials are simply smarter than the rest of us because they weren't poisoned by lead to the degree that we were.
Yeah.
And certainly our politicians from the older generations. But you know there is going to be a politician who takes credit for this. If Trump sees that graph, he's going to be like, oh, no. You see, I made America great again. Well, what do you have to do with it? What happened in the last 20 years? No, it's me. It's me. Okay.
If he tweets it right now, he watches TYT. Anyway.
All right, what's next?
Okay, let's really mix it up. Coinciding with International Women's Day, Nike has announced that it's going to be producing a sports hijab for Muslim women, which is amazing. And they've got a famous Muslim, I believe, ice skater, Zahra Lari. You're seeing modeling it, the iconic swoosh, because of course it's Nike. We got some more pictures for you too. And they've actually got a lot of athletes now that they have who are modeling it in different parts of the world, because it's going to be obviously an international rollout there, being paired with other Nike apparel. We've got a quote from Zahra Lari, who said, "I was thrilled and a bit emotional to see Nike prototyping a hijab. I've tried so many different hijabs for performance, and so few of them actually work for me. But once I put it on and took it for a spin on the ice, I was blown away by the fit and the lightweight." Now, of course, to some extent, this is a spokesperson for sportswear. So they're going to say stuff like that. Every shoe is amazing. But think about it. If these weren't actually being made, and I sort of just assumed that they must be, because we see the Iranian soccer team and we see these different teams, but they're apparently just adapting things for normal wear. But all clothing can be customized for athletic use. And so think about how amazing it must be to see one of the biggest sportswear companies in the world suddenly taking an interest in you and producing things specifically for you.
Yeah. So a lot of folks who looked at it thought it kind of looks badass. JR, you were a track star at USC. Were you saying in the morning meeting that guys might start wearing this now?
I don't know if guys would, but I mean, you know, there's always things like streamlined things. You know, like it's swimming. It's you want to take down the drag. Same with running. Something more streamlined. Maybe you have like some messy hair. Some, yeah. I don't know. You want to take down the drag.
If you have to wear a hijab and it's not aerodynamic, that's going to slow you down, right? That's going to be a major issue in a sporting event where like 0.01 seconds makes the difference.
Yeah.
So look, I'm not a big fan of the hijab. I think that it's a part of the Muslim culture and that I wish wasn't there. But that's like my opinion, man. And there's a lot of Muslims in the world who wear the hijab, who think it's part of celebrating Islam. You know, I think it's a wrong interpretation of the Quran. Plus, I'm not religious, so it's, I guess, not my place to say. But everything's my place to say, right? So, I wish they didn't have to create a hijab, sports hijab, etc. But there are 1.6 billion Muslims in the world, and some of them are female athletes. And so here's the, I think, the best part of the story, and what's going to make the right wing heads explode, because it's an internal contradiction they're not going to know what to do with. If you want to discriminate against Muslims, you're going to lose. Why? Because companies run America, they run the world. Okay. Now, I tell you about the dangers of that a lot of times, but one of the upsides of that is that companies have to sell things to 7 billion people on the planet. So they're going to insist on diversity. Why? Because there's 1.6 billion Muslim customers in the world. So whenever I see international ads, it is filled to the room with Muslims. And I told the story on another show where I was like, wow, that Coke ad has like a million Muslims in it. Yeah. And I was like, oh, of course, they're selling Coke. 1.6 out of 7 billion people on the planet are Muslims. Of course they're going to have Muslims in the ad. And of course they're going to be open to diversity, because the whole world is diverse.
Yeah, it's like Hollywood starting to appeal, trying to appeal more to the Chinese audience, because it's this huge thing that currently is untapped.
That's right. So if you're a racist or a bigot, and you think, oh, and you're right winger, you think capitalism's awesome, man. Well, capitalism's got a funny surprise for you.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of different problems, but generally speaking, in this case, bigotry ain't one of them.
Yeah.
And so they're on the opposite side as you. And so, and we, for the one of the few times, hey, we got the powerful on our side.
Yeah, I love to see it. I mean, like progress, getting an entire society to see half of that society differently is an incredibly slow process, a process ongoing in literally every country in the world. Some have gone farther in it, but every country, including ours, including European countries, still have a ways to go. But I just think about how hard it must be in some societies if you want to be an athlete and you're a woman. Like, and you're fighting to be accepted in different professions, different hobbies, different sports. And if this helps just a little bit, and not just Nike, I mean, it's great that Nike's doing it, but if more people start to take an interest in it, and if that can bring more women into it, then that's an amazing thing. It's just one more step towards a society being where we think it should be.
Yeah.
And it's badass.
It
looks, I love it, man. It looks good.
Okay, yeah.
I love that. There was a brief period in my life, and this makes me sound ridiculous. There was a brief period in my life where I was in good enough shape that I was regularly wearing Under Armour, and I missed those days because it looked awesome. I miss them so much.
Yeah. Hijabs, they're not for me, but diversity and respecting one another, that is for me. So the fact that we've got multinational corporations on that team, if you will, is a great thing.
Yeah.
Okay, one more story for you guys.
Okay, I was trying to figure out if we were going to do that, but it's a good story. I'm glad that we are. Okay. A 4-year-old rhinoceros named Vince, who lived in a zoo in France, was unfortunately found dead earlier this week. This is Monday night. He was found shot 3 times in the head inside of the zoo with his horn cut off, apparently with a chainsaw. The white rhinoceros's second horn had also been partially hacked off, indicating the perpetrators had run out of time or their equipment had failed. Now, we're talking about this animal, Vince the rhinoceros. We're also going to talk about another case of poaching like this, because this is still a worldwide problem. And now, apparently, it's moving into places where we've never seen it before. This is believed to be the first poached animal inside of a European zoo, at least that we were able to find. Now, why is this going on? Well, rhinoceros horns can be sold on the black market for around 30,000 pounds each and are particularly sought after in China, where they are believed to have aphrodisiac qualities. So that's in China, but of course, in many other parts of the world, they're used for antiques, gun handles, jewelry, all sorts of things like that. And it's shocking that this happened, that it's inside a zoo. It took place despite security cameras and five members of zoo staff living on the site. And remember, gun plus chainsaw. But it still happened.
Well, if this is about at least $50,000, right? That's a lot of incentive to break in. And in the zoo, they obviously have some security, but it's not like it's a bank, right? And if there's just $50,000 laying out there for you to take, you might take it. So now, but don't get me wrong, I'm not excusing it. I think what happened was horrific. And the main culprits to me are not the guys who did it. If by God, catch them, put them in jail, don't get me wrong. The main culprits are the people who believe this insanity about how these horns are an aphrodisiac and are willing to pay 30,000 pounds for a rhinoceros horn. Look, there are things that are cultural, and I guess some liberals say, hey, you know, it's all relative. I'm not one of those guys, okay? I think some parts of culture are disastrous, including some parts of American culture. But look, you can take examples from all across the world. Honor killings, horrific, right? In Central Asia, some women are kidnapped, raped, and then the family comes over and convinces them to marry their rapist, right? And that's a tradition, okay? That's a tradition we could do without, right? Yeah. And so this tradition of thinking that horns are aphrodisiacs is not true. Get it through your thick skulls. It isn't true. And take a goddamn Viagra and be done with it, okay? It's not going to make your penis larger. It's not going to make it more erect. You're paying all that money and butchering these animals for no goddamn reason. And if you think that's part of your culture, I'm sorry, but your culture is wrong. It's just factually incorrect.
And that's totally true. And there's a lot of animals that are sharks obviously suffer for the same reason. A lot of animals suffer because of the belief that they have some sort of medicinal or sexual effect. But even if there wasn't that, there's a lot of people who really think a rifle looks cooler with some ivory on it. Or think that for a piano it's necessary, or for jewelry it's necessary. And I understand that a lot of people will rightly say, well, if it's horrific to hack off a horn from a rhino and to put it on jewelry, well, then also using leather and things like that. And I understand that's a spectrum, and I'm moving on that spectrum. But at the very least, let's understand that these animals are far, far rarer than in other places. I mean, rhinos have, some rhinos have rebounded a little bit thanks to the efforts of conservationists. But they're still extremely rare. And we're going to move on to another animal that's even more rare. So conservationists also discovered the body of Satao II, one of the countries is in Kenya, largest, most iconic elephants, during a routine flyover of Tsavo National Park. He was likely killed when he was shot by a poisoned arrow in a poaching attempt. They apparently found the body several weeks ago, conducted an investigation. Rangers recovered his long, heavy tusks before poachers claimed them. They also detained two poachers believed to be responsible for his death about 2 weeks later, recovering an AK-47 along with bows and poisoned arrows. Now, the reason he's referred to as a tusker is because this is not a normal elephant. This is a rarer type of elephant whose tusks are so long that they can actually reach the ground, and thus they become a more valuable target for poachers. And it's sort of tragic. This elephant was named after another Satao. That one was killed, another tusker was killed by poachers back in 2014. When he was found, his tusks were missing and his face had been so badly mutilated that authorities had difficulty identifying him. Now, there's also some horrifying numbers here. And as I was talking before, this is about rarity too. Poachers kill between 20,000 and 30,000 elephants a year for their tusks. Jeez. That horrific number represents significant progress, because at one point it was over 40,000, and literally more than 10% of all elephants on the planet were being killed each year as a result of poaching. But the tuskers are far more rare than even these elephants. Only 30 tuskers remain in all of Africa.
Oh.
and one was just killed.
And they're killing them for the horns, so some guy thinks that his penis gets a little larger. Jesus Christ, man. Have some sort of decency. And again, if you think I'm being too tough on the Chinese here, as John pointed out, people use it for other reasons as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, every country and culture has its own problems. We had slavery here in America. That was a pretty terrible part of our culture. And look at, and you could say, hey, look at what you do to your cows. And it's horrific and what we do to our cows and pigs, etc. And I eat steak, and maybe I'm a hypocrite too. And I understand that. But we have got to stop killing these animals. There's only 30 left of the Tuskers.
Yeah.
Just for a little bit of profit for something that doesn't even work. It's just, it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
And so they should do a public, you know, campaign to let folks know who believe this nonsense that it isn't true. Stop murdering these animals for what you think is your gain. And you're it like our right wing here. You don't believe in science, you don't believe in facts, and the things that you believe are grossly wrong and leads to gross injustice.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in some cases, I'm sure they try. In this case, they didn't actually even get the tusks. And it's great that that conservationist organization does this over a big area of this natural preserve, catching some of the poachers. They believe that that poaching group may be sort of broken by these two people being taken. And it's great that they do what they do, but it's terrible that the numbers are still as high as they are.
Yep. All right, we're massively out of time. So I got to tell you about things that are coming up for the members. We got the post game and the post game. I'm going to tell you something I don't know, and I'm going to ask you guys what it is. And some of you will be really surprised that I don't know it. Okay?
I don't know yet.
Yes. And it's a known unknown. Okay.
We're also going to talk about the story that you wanted to have on the show today that I desperately try to stop us from covering.
Yes, I was wildly inappropriate. What was I inappropriate about the John Band? And then I have one other thing in the post game, which is a Republican politician said something coded and terrible, and we didn't get to it on the show. And I want to bring it back, and I want to tell you what it is. That's all for the members at tytnetwork.com/join. And you also power the show, by the way. So we thank the members, of course, every day for that. And then finally, old school tonight. I believe it's me, Ben, and Wes. It's going to be a great
edition.
It's
you, Wes, and Jimmy, I think. That's what Wes tweeted anyway.
Oh, is that right? Either way, it's going to be awesome. Check out old school. Bye-bye.